Blog Talk Radio.
Future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie ahead, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I'm just super fantastic. Happy Friday to you, my friend.
This is a little unusual. We normally have done our shows on Thursday night, at least for a while now.
We have done every night of the week, but it's been a while since we've done a Friday show. But at least we did it for the best possible reason. So that one of the hosts could go see a movie on Thursday night.
Well, it was this deal where my lovely bride surprised our four sons with movie tickets, and I will just call Phil up and tell him the situation. He's a family man too; he'll understand, especially since we're talking about the Avengers here, right?
Yeah. So. And here it is, 24 hours later, we're speaking again, you know, it's like,
exactly.
I called off the lawsuit, I feel like there's a strong path forward for us, I really do. No, I think that was awesome, awesome of Sherilyn to do that, awesome that you guys got to go see the movie on its first night, and I know we were going to talk some indoor skydiving, but now you've mentioned the Avengers, should we go straight to the Avengers, or... Stephen, Friday night, you're in charge. You know what? This is your night. So you just tell us what order you want to talk about.
Well, this is Open Line Friday on the World Transform.
Exactly. Please don't call. We're not going to take your call. All right.
But anyway, let me just – I don't want to do any spoilers. The movie's brand new. Avengers is the Avengers Age of Ultron is a great, great action movie. It's a – it's a summer blockbuster of the first order. You got to go see it. And there's actually, Phil, some things that we could talk about on this show that, you know, some issues in that movie that are dealt with that we could talk about on the show. And so perhaps towards the end of the summer or something, after everyone's had a chance to see it, we could do a spoiler-filled show about Age of Ultron, and that would be fun. Maybe we could throw in a what's the other robot movie that I want to talk about that's coming out this summer? Oh, that's one. But I was actually it's got this sexy girl robot in it.
I don't know.
It escapes my mind here. But anyway, right, well, maybe we can just have a movie show later on the summer, and that'd be fun. So.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a philosophical issue around this new Avengers that we'll have to talk about too. Because my understanding is, in fact, this was pretty much implied in the after the credits scene that we saw at the end of the first Avengers movie, was that we would be seeing Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in this movie. So I'm sorry if that's a spoiler to anyone, but that looked like a pretty strong.
Well, I mean, they're. They're in the previews. So
That we're going to see them. But it's a different completely different Quicksilver than the Quicksilver we had in X-Men: Days of Future Past. So
right.
We've got two completely different versions of the same character, which calls into all kinds of question as to whether the X-Men movies are occurring in the same universe as the Avengers movie, or, you know.
I think it's clear they're not. And, you know, one way that they're dealing with it, you see, they don't, the Marvel Cinematic Universe guys don't even have the right to use the name Mutant. And so in
right,
the Marvel,
Mutant.
Yeah, they're calling them Miracles. You know, they're calling that is the people that are born with powers like that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe are being called Miracles. So that's kind of an interesting choice. And
You know what? If we were really going to just geek out and do a comic show, there's interesting pedigree around the word Miracle as a substitute for other things. But you know what? I'm just going to leave that hanging, and remind me, we'll pick it up sometime because there's of particular interest to Marvel Comics, as a matter of fact. All right. So having left that, tell us all about indoor skydiving.
Okay. So last week I took my family to Dallas, and this was in preparation for the homeschool prom. It's kind of an interesting thing. Every year in Dallas, they do the homeschool prom, and you think, well, you know, what would that be like? It's, you know, you got a couple
it
of.
Sounds,
you know,
let me just tell you that the people who don't know, all right, that sounds like a really sad thing. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you. Put those words together, and that doesn't sound
homeschool
like a good
prom.
Time.
That, oh, that's so
yeah,
sad.
Yeah.
You know what? It's like the least sad thing you'll ever see, Phil.
It's like you dance
world
with your sister, right? It's the homeschool.
Yeah,
program.
Exactly. Or invite your cousin, if you're lucky. You know, it is the world's biggest prom now, and it's like a couple thousand, you know, kids having a great time, and they do different themes every year. You know, this year it was C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and his whole universe. You know, they built it in the foyer outside the, you know, the ballroom. And, I mean, just, it was beautiful. And, you know.
Wow,
and
so the prom
year,
theme was Narnia? I mean, it was like a Narnia prom? That is
last year.
That is Grandmaster Nerd stuff, too. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. And then last year it was the Lord of the, you know, it was The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, and all that. And I was dressed as a dwarf. You know, I was actually a cast member last year. That was fun. So that was, you know, we just had a good time.
Sounds awesome.
Yes, but before all that, on the Friday before all that, we showed up early, and they have indoor skydiving in a little Frisco is the name of the town, and. I'd seen this as a kid, Phil. You remember the show That's Incredible back in the late 70s, early 80s? And on that show, there was a segment. I watched it religiously. It was always cool stuff. It was basically the world transformed on TV back in the 70s, okay? It was always cool stuff like that. And they showed this, and back then it was literally like a prop from a huge aircraft and an aircraft engine underneath the floor of this thing, and it would blow people up and in a tube, and it would be like skydiving. Well, it was very much the same thing. It's the same concept. Of course, you don't see the propeller underneath you anymore, which has to be reassuring, you know.
Takes some of the thrill out, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. You're not looking into the face of death so much anymore. But it's the same concept, and you can go way up in this tube, like, you know, three or four stories up to the top of the tube, and, you know, and just float around and everything else. And the instructors, it was amazing. I mean, they were swooping in and out of the tube like birds. It was amazing. These people could fly. I mean, it was something else to see. Anyway, so I paid the exorbitant fee for my four children to be able to do it. And and Sherilyn goes, man, that's expensive. And I said, when am I going to have a chance to spend this amount of money and give them something that will remember the rest of their lives? You know, because they're not going to forget this. And they're not. They got in there, they were with an instructor the whole time. So it was safe. And, it was skydiving. And, you know, afterwards they were saying, well, is it really like skydiving? And I said, well, think about it. You know, you jump out of an aircraft, you accelerate to a speed at which the air won't let you go any faster, right? So it's the
right.
air is supporting you the same way as the air supports you in the tube. And you notice, you know, talking to my bigger son, that they had to turn up the air for you versus your little brother here. You know, the amount
right.
of air that they had to shoot through the tube to keep you floating around was more than this little guy. So if y'all both jumped out of an airplane together, you would beat your little brother to the ground.
You would reach the, what do they call that, velocity?
The terminal velocity, yeah.
Terminal velocity faster, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And so it, yeah, they were just, and they found it very interesting, and it was interesting that the littler guys were able to master it quicker than the older you are, and there were like full grown men in there too, but they were doing the worst. It was like almost came naturally to, you know, there was little kids in there like 3 and 4 years old. It was like, you know, they just flew like birds. It was amazing. And, but, you know, it was the older people that is like, oh, you know, they're getting all off balance. They can't, you know, quite get it. And the poor instructors having to muscle some of these big guys, you know, to keep them from like, you know, headbutting the wall and stuff. It was interesting and funny and, you know, thrilling and all that rolled in together. So if you ever get a chance to try this, I don't know if the Denver area has it, but. You ever have a chance to drive?
It's not too far from my house, actually.
Well,
I drive by it all the time, and I have never gone in. I'm going to have to check it out.
Well, you ought to just go in and observe, you know.
Yeah.
They won't charge you anything to do that. And I think you'll find it fascinating. So
I will do that, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's right by the bowling alley. You know, I don't bowl either, but I mean, like, I already know what bowling looks like. I really ought to go.
You could watch bowling, too, but I promise you it won't be nearly as interesting or as fun.
Unless they got some spectacular bowling going on over there, I think you're right. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, you get some leagues in there that are bowling perfect games.
The Ninja League. I don't know, but yeah. The Mutant
right.
League,
yeah,
or Miracle League, depending on which universe we're living in.
See
how we tie it all together on this program.
Yeah, we
work
do.
Hard.
We do.
We work hard to bring it to bring it all together, to bring it to you. Same day,
and,
okay? That's
ladies
same,
and gentlemen,
same day
welcome.
Delivery. Yeah. You are welcome. That's right. That's why we're here. So, speaking of same day delivery, let's talk about the interesting and very sad story of WebVan. Now, we've talked about WebVan before, right? Because it's this great...
It seemed like a brilliant idea, didn't it?
Yeah, it's archetype of, you know, what went wrong in the original .com era. You know, it was this same-day grocery delivery service. You'd go online on your, you know, back in those days, desktop computer, most likely, you know, running
right.
Windows 95 at the time, probably. And, you know, you would bring up the web page, and you would find the groceries that you want to order, and you would enter your order. And then the web van, within 30 minutes, would deliver your order. They actually had that 30 minutes trick that they learned from Domino's. Brilliant idea for a business, and it was tied in with some retail chains, perhaps not really as tied in with them as it should have been. And it was very well funded. They put together a huge amount of money. They built infrastructure for it. They built warehouses. They deployed a fleet of vans, the original web vans, and they operated for, I guess, I don't know, a couple of years, three at the max, and it didn't work. It failed in a most spectacular fashion. The estimate is that at its height, WebVan was paying $130 per delivery. Okay, so every time they deployed their van out to send somebody their, you know, $30 worth of groceries, you know, or whatever it was they were shipping, it cost them $130. So, you know, that's not sustainable. I mean, the plan was obviously, you know, what the strategy was there, Stephen.
Well, you know, to basically buy the market, and then once, you know, and have pretty much everybody used to using you at that point, at which point you either get better with markets of, you know, with scaling, or you raise your price, or a little of both, right?
Yeah,
something
we'll
like that.
Actually, you truly answered the question, but my response is going to be, yeah, 130 a pop, but we'll make it up in volume. Okay, that was, I think,
that's the joke, yeah.
That was the strategy, right? Well, if we send enough out at 130 a pop, well, you know. So, didn't work.
Oh,
then
God.
In 2009, when Amazon started experimenting, early experiments kind of in the current phase of same-day delivery, when Amazon started experimenting with it, they resurrected the Webvan name, and they've got some vans going out called Webvan. So it was a, you know, there's a little bit of a phoenix rising from the ashes with Webvan, but it's in the face of, we've got a very interesting situation now where, you know, Walmart has gone gangbusters into this space. Amazon is trying it out. Google is trying it out. And retailers at the local level are finding that they can actually compete with and beat providers like Amazon, providers like Walmart, with same day, because they're already kind of stocked. They're already sort of staged for same day in the way that, in particular, Amazon has a hard time being staged. You know, Amazon is perfectly staged for second day, as all us Prime members know, right? I mean, that's what they
right.
really do well. And they can give you next day if you don't mind shelling out a little extra money. But same day is a big stretch for them because it's a little outside of their model. But in the age of Uber, in the age of apps and just-in-time resources and people looking for spot work that such as can be provided by a well-connected you know, mobile app and a widely deployed workforce, you suddenly have the situation where Macy's, you know, not the leading edge tech kind of company that you would think of. Macy's is suddenly leading the charge, and they're doing some big things with same-day delivery. And, in fact, a lot of shopping malls have kind of pooled their resources and are providing not only same-day delivery, but they're providing they're providing delivery of stuff you've bought in the store. I don't know if you've ever had this happen, Stephen, where this is probably not a thing that's occurred to you too many times. Believe me, this is a real thing that happens to people, where you're at the mall and you're shopping and you've got so much stuff you just don't want to carry it anymore. You just hand it off to somebody in the mall and they send it to your house, right? You say the time that you want it and it shows up at your house. Then you're free, like, to go to the movie, go have dinner, go do more shopping, whatever you want to do. And this whole model of kind of you know, leave
it's
the driving
an Uber deal. Yeah.
It's very much like Uber. It's catching on. In particular, Deliv, which I've linked in the show notes, deliv.co, not com, is cashing in on this, and they've become kind of the Uber of same day delivery. They're partnered with Macy's, they're partnered with a bunch of retailers, and with shopping malls to provide this service. And it's very interesting the kind of controversy that's occurred over the last, I don't know, month or so, when let's see if I can find this quote here. Fred Smith, you know who that is, chimed in on same-day delivery. Okay, Fred Smith, for those who don't know, the founder of FedEx, okay, the guy who invented next day, the guy who was, you know, the champion of cutting-edge delivery, what, 30, 40
when
years
ago? Absolutely, positively has to be there overnight.
Yeah, overnight. Exactly. Fred Smith, he's talking about this idea of same-day delivery and using apps. And he says, I think where the shoe fits, there's certainly some demand for moving a package across town, and Uber or Lyft or the taxi services that have been in business for a long time have been able to do that, or some of the local same-day services, he said to the Wall Street Journal. But, Smith continued, the same-day model runs counter to the rhythm of how most people live in their 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. worlds. Thus, he reasoned, they prefer to order online after their home, leading to greater demand for orders processed and shipped the following day over long distances. So, you know, sadly, Fred Smith has looked at the world and decided, you know what people really need is overnight. You can't blame him for feeling that way. That's kind of been good to him as a model. But meanwhile,
you danced with the one who brought you, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think Fred is dancing with the one that brung him. And meanwhile, people are getting really enamored with the idea of I want it today. You know, it turns out you can get a pizza the same day. To go back to Webvan and I think their 30 minutes thing was just part of the problem with them. But you can get a pizza today, and you know the thing you want. There's a really good chance if you live in even a mid-sized urban area, the thing you want is within a few minutes drive of your house, right?
And can
be delivered to you if someone's willing to pick up that a little additional cost. And there's issues around how exactly that happens because you're already paying full retail. And go ahead.
And here's the thing, you know, in this economy, which is not terrible, but it's not super robust either. I think it's fair to say that we're not growing hugely right now as an economy, right? There are people that are looking for work, right? And there are people that perhaps have a couple of part-time jobs and are still having trouble meeting, and so they have a few minutes maybe between this part-time job and that part-time job that they could do something productive and earn a few more bucks. And that's kind of the Uber model, right? It allows you to, you got an hour and a half between job, number one and job number two in the afternoon. You can spend that, picking up somebody and taking them to a job or something.
Exactly.
You can be a taxi service. That's Uber, right? So this is Uber for food or Uber for whatever, right?
Uber for retail, basically. Yeah, anything you can get retail. I think that's true. It's going to be interesting to see if and when, please, the economy picks up in a huge way and the employment situation changes, the workforce situation changes, what impact that will have on Uber. Because we've got a situation now where people really like and are increasingly dependent on Uber. And
yeah.
I think within a couple of years, people are really going to like and be increasingly dependent on things like Deliv. It might not be Deliv, but things like it. Just this idea of, of course they'll bring it to me at my convenience. See, that's the thing that Webvan never figured out. With a pizza, you want it ASAP, right? Because you want it to still be hot. So you call Domino's, you're already hungry, and you want your pizza within 30 minutes because you want a pizza, right? If you want, diapers delivered to your home, there's a good chance that you need them today or very soon, but you might not need them right this minute. And what you would like is for them to show up, between the time you get home and before the babysitter leaves or, some window like that. And the amazing thing about the services we offer now is you can get pinpoint accuracy. It's like same day. It's not about 30 minutes. It's about when I want it, right? Which apps and logistical software that are running in the background make it possible to do. I think that's going to become pretty addictive for people. There's a lot of pushback inside the retail industry. A lot of the analysts are scratching their heads and saying, "Well, Webvan. This is kind of the big objection to same day delivery right now is but Webvan." And I think what we're about to learn is that the fact that Webvan failed doesn't mean that this idea is never going to work, because it looks like, the idea is going to work. It's working now in a fairly limited but rapidly growing context, and it looks like it's about to become enormous, much, much bigger than it's been before. So I thought it'd be fun to talk about what's different in the world in 2015. What's different between the world in 2015 and the world in about 2000 when Webvan fell apart? And I know we've got some stories to support that, but Stephen, I think you had maybe a couple more examples of this kind of thing that has occurred.
Yeah. There's a lot to talk about what's different between now and then, but let's give some examples of some things that were tried unsuccessfully a few times before it was successfully implemented. And one thing that we've mentioned a couple of times on this show and on the predecessor show, Fast Forward Radio, was the transatlantic cable. And the transatlantic cable, when they got it right, we have been in steady immediate contact with the European continent ever since. Okay, and when was that? Let's see, the 1866. I mean, that is a long time ago. And so once the 1866 cable and the 18 and they were able to fix an 1865 cable that had, you know, had kind of fizzled out, and so they had two cables, you know, they, you know, quickly other cables were put in, and so when one cable you know, played out, there were other, there were others that were still working, and we've never been out of contact, you know, immediate contact with the European continent ever since. But it wasn't the first time. I mean, they, five attempts to lay the cable were made over the years. The first, wow, can you imagine this, was done, the first attempt, 1857. We're talking, you know, that's like almost a decade before the, well, let's see, the Civil War began in 1861, right? So, I mean, that's like 4 years before the Civil War. You know,
wow,
that's impossible. You know, it's, you know, to even try something like that in that early point. And but they, you know, they tried in 1857, tried in 1858, 1865, and that one kind of lasted for about 3 weeks and then fizzled out. And then the 1866 cable that worked well, and they were able to fix the 1865 one, and then they laid more. And so you know, but that's you know, something that they just kept working.
And I can imagine, I can only imagine that if you look, go look in the microfiche or wherever, you can find newspaper editorials in 1865, 1866 saying, I can't believe anyone is wasting their money on this boondoggle again.
Oh, yeah.
It's been demonstrated time and again that this doesn't work. It will never work. It's a pipe dream, and we're never going to have a transatlantic cable, right? I mean, that's,
oh, yeah, and, they,
that
and the guys that
wisdom.
Were
I mean,
like,
they had five web vans leading up to this, right? There's no way it was ever
exactly
gonna
happen. And they were going before Congress and asking for money to do trial, you know, runs with, you know, under the water of other places and things. And it was, you know, and you know, for as little as $30,000, they could put, you know, lay a cable between Washington and New York, and you know, that's a waste of money, you know, the taxpayers' money. Anyway, it was, and they just, it took a while before it was accepted as a possibility that they could do this. And, you know, and then, it, you know, for it to be something more than just a, you know, just a gimmick or something that was just, it's something that was actually important in day-to-day life. Once people figured out, hey, you know, and so I would recommend, Phil, the best book I've read on the subject is called The Victorian Internet, and it's a fascinating account of the telegraph and all that was going, you know, all the back and forth and the political infighting and the dreamers and there were a few people that were just outright scammers and were, you know, stealing money, which led to setbacks, as you can imagine. But it was it's just a fascinating story of how fast the telegraph was adopted and you know and how it changed the world.
Well, it
really
was the original
leading
internet
to our world.
Yeah. You know, when it worked finally, when they finally got the cable down, what had changed? Is there one thing you can point at and say, well, here's why? They couldn't do it before, but they could. My guess is they probably learned a lot each time they failed.
Technology
may have
improved. Well, they were using they used cable in one attempt that actually floated. a ship came along and it was a fishing vessel. Said, well, this, you know, this is kind of blocking our path. I think I'll cut this thing, and. Yeah. And they figure out, well, maybe we need to make sure that it's something that will sink. Was their next attempt. And then in other attempts, they learned that the amplitude of the signal was very important. They needed to keep the amplitude low or they'd burn the cable up. And so they learned how to do that. You know, each, like you say, each failure led to, okay, that's not quite the way you do it. You know, we believe it can be done, and there was issues of, well, if we lower the amplitude too much, it won't, you know, it won't transmit all the way across the Atlantic, and so they had to find the sweet spot, but they did, you know, it took a lot of experimentation, but they got it right. And can you imagine? I mean, before, you know, to get word from Europe to the United States took weeks. It was a ship, you know. I mean, a ship had to go across the ocean with the with news. And then you go from that overnight to instantaneous communication. And how much of a world changer that was, how much that shrunk the world at one point, you know?
You know, even if you could get the letter right, you know, throw it onto the ship just as it's pulling out of the dock, right?
Is
that, two weeks, right? I mean, it's 10 days anyway. It's longer than that.
At least,
I don't know. I mean, it's a long time, right? I mean, because these weren't very fast ships back in those days.
And it was probably the Pony Express from the dock to whoever it was you mailed. So, you know, it was... Yeah, you could hope for that the person you're sending it to would get their mail in a month. You know, it was crazy, and that's so you can imagine how big of a deal it was when the telegraph actually worked, the transatlantic telegraph. So yeah, that's
absolutely
there are plenty of other examples.
Plenty of other examples that we could name. Certainly, human-powered flight is a great example of something that was predicted all the way back to Leonardo da Vinci, if not prior to that, and something that people were working on from probably the late 19th century until the Wright brothers got it to work. With naysayers, within months of the Wright brothers succeeding, saying that it would never happen. Same kind of thing. In this instance, I think a lot of things converged. There was we got better and better materials available, and better and better models for how we might do it. I think there was a lot of iterative learning, but also just the Wright brothers. You got to give them credit for being just incredible geniuses.
They were good,
very imitative of what other people were doing.
Well, and it's something that a lot of people don't realize is that they built a wind tunnel and tested their designs in a wind tunnel to see if they'd fly. And they were building it was the third iteration that flew at Kitty Hawk, and the first two were not, you know, that they tried in the wind tunnel that they built. I believe, where are they from? Ohio. You know, that just they weren't getting enough lift, and they knew how much lift it'd take because they were doing everything they could to coax as much power out of their engine as possible. So, like you say, a lot of convergence there. It was the engines were just barely powerful enough at that point in 1903
to just barely enough
to get off the ground, and they coaxed the last bit of power that they needed out of the engine to manage to do it, and then of course they had to figure out flight surfaces. And you know, the interesting one of the things they did for control was they used wing warping, which is something that people abandoned pretty quickly once they figured out ailerons and flaps and things like that. And they also had the stabilizer, like basically what amounts to the tail of the aircraft in the front. You know, they were working on a blank slate, so they didn't know, you know, that wasn't the best way to do it. So they were just doing it the best way they could figure out. But it was good enough to work and allowed them to get off the ground in December of 1903. So, after many other people had failed.
And when at a time when the conventional wisdom was that there's just no way that it could work.
Yeah, the smartest people in the world, smart people like, I believe, Lord Kelvin is famously on record as saying it was just never going to happen.
Yeah, within months of it actually occurring, he said it would never happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he were with us today, he'd say, somebody always has to bring this up, right? I mean,
I wish you guys would leave that. Yeah, I did some other cool things. Come on.
How about all the science I did that was right, okay? Come on. Give me some.
How do you measure heat? Come on.
We always tell that story, but Lord Kelvin did a lot of good stuff, too. So, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't
need to be picking on that.
That's what makes it so spectacular that he was wrong, in fact, you know.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't just some schmo saying it, right? He was a really smart guy.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so there you go. There's a couple good examples, and we could cite many more. But something critical changed, or several things changed along the way, and suddenly that which was impossible and was still believed to be impossible at the time it occurred by many finally did occur. In our Facebook my Facebook post about this show yesterday, our friend Samantha Atkins, she responded and she said that a lot of it has to do with timing. And I think that is right. But what timing means is everything's not ready the first time you try something or the first 10 times you try something. And ultimately you get to the point, Stephen, as you were saying, where the engines are finally just small and light and powerful enough, you know, and you've got,
just
guys
enough
with
understanding
built,
of
like the Wright brothers, right, Orville Wilbur, yeah. You know, they weren't big guys, you know, you've got a nice canvas wood plane with a powerful enough
yeah.
engine and a small enough pilot, and
it really helped that neither Orville nor Wilbur were morbidly obese. That's important.
Not even that. I mean, if it had just been us, right, Stephen? If you and I were the Wright brothers, you know, it wouldn't
have.
We'd have
had to hire a jockey. You know, I would definitely.
exactly. You know.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we know what to do based on the skydiving story. We would have gotten your youngest son. We would have put him on the plane.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, you get the young lot guy that.
Sherilyn,
know
it's for science. Okay, I can hear the conversation now.
Besides,
for the good of the planet. Come on. Besides, he wants to. Don't you see? He wants to. Let me talk to her. I got it all.
Well, you know, we'll slap a helmet on him. It'll be okay.
Yeah, it's not like he's not going to have a helmet. Yeah. All right. Besides, you've been saying all along it's not going to work. And then it gets ugly. Okay, never mind. So there it is. There it is. The timing is right. Everything comes together, and it works. Now, let's go back. Web van, year 2000. That was a very advanced age in the history of humanity. I mean, we look back now at 2000, and it feels like it's still the same era we're in. But you know what? A lot has changed, actually, in the last 15 years. It's not the big overt stuff. Like, if you look back 15 years before the year 2000, if you go back to, like, the year 1985, you can really mark the difference, right, in terms of technology.
Yeah.
You know, in 2000, yeah. Everybody had a computer. In 1985, a computer was a big bank of a machine with spindles on it that, you know, existed in government offices or something like that. I mean, it wasn't quite that bad, but it was almost that bad. So there was this huge technological change. Well, 15 years ago, everybody had computers. Today, everybody has computers, but it's different. It's the kinds of machines we have, the power of the machines that we have, how we use them, what they are capable of, and how they are networked, how they connect with each other, and how mobile they are. All make a big difference. I think they all play a big factor in this story, as do some of these other things. Let's talk about some of these pieces that we had linked. This is, you know, once again, always transparent about how the shows come together. I had one idea for a show. Stephen, you had kind of a here's some interesting things going on in the world idea for a show, and it's amazing to me how well these things go together. So if you look at our first story, consider pitching a virtual startup to your boss. And I assume you read this, Stephen. This was in TechCrunch, where they've got Disrupt New York coming up. I think we should all try to go to that. Consider pitching a virtual startup to your boss. You know what? As soon as I hear that, I immediately understand what they're saying. They're saying, go, within the organization you're in, suggest a disruptive idea that this existing company can try, and see if you can make a go of it with your existing infrastructure. It speaks to ideas that we're very familiar with now that hadn't occurred yet, that people weren't talking about 15 years ago. Things like lean manufacturing processes, things like the, what do you call it, that development process. It's on the tip of my tongue, the really fast way of developing code.
Just in time?
Well, it's a just-in-time process. It's the one where you do the minimum viable product, and it's called I'll think of it in a minute. I'll think of it tonight at 3 in the morning. I'll wake up and go, you know.
You go, that was it. Well, we'll put it in the show notes for everybody. So. Anyway.
Exactly. Well, everybody knows what I'm talking about. They're going, God, I can't believe Phil can't think of that word. But the point is we do development differently. We view products differently than we did at that time. You know, 15 years ago, it wasn't just that business existed in a bricks and mortar world. We had a brick and mortar mindset. We had an infrastructure mindset. and a belief that a thing was real if you put enough real stuff around it. And, you know, one of the problems with WebVan was all that glorious stuff they spent the money on, buying all those trucks, buying that warehouse. I mean, replicating a lot of infrastructure that already existed.
Are you talking about the lean startup methodology? Lean startup.
Well, lean startup is huge. I mean, absolutely. That's a big part of it. But lean is a manufacturing word which has then been applied to the startup world. But it's not the development methodology I'm trying to think of. I'll think of it in just a minute. But they're closely related. Absolutely. They're closely related because the lean startup is I think where the whole notion of the minimum viable product comes from. And it's this development methodology that actually enables it, because you get to results much more quickly. You put the minimum amount of resource into doing something that is required to get something that's good enough that if somebody's going to make a decision to buy it or not, they can look at it and say, yes, that looks like the thing, and I will buy it. You know, it's not all the bells and whistles. And perhaps it's not even producible in the kind of, you know, ramped up volume that you would be able to produce something later, but it's enough, you know, it's like the ultimate proof of concept, right? That you can say, yeah, well, this is enough to say that this can happen. We didn't have those ideas back then. We had proofs of concept, but the idea was either you were in a business or you weren't in the business. And if you were in,
yeah,
right, then you were going to buy all the trucks, you were going to put out the warehouse, you were going to do all that kind of stuff. And yeah, and lean startup is saying, no, you know, you do the very least amount you can do. And now we live in a world that's suited to that. You don't, in this instance, they're saying don't start a new business, just start within the business you're in. Same kind of idea. Don't go out and buy a fleet. Use all the cars that are around, right? You don't build a warehouse. You use the retail outlets that already exist. So it's this idea of leveraging existing stuff, which can be connected by technology that, you know, 15 years ago wasn't quite capable of bringing it all together.
Well, and I've done it in my own business, Bill. We, you know, Shreveport office, we advertise on television, and you know, and that's a big, huge expense, right? And so we determined that, hey, there's underserved markets that are, you know, watching the same television channels. So we opened a second office a couple of years ago, and in a month we're opening our third office that's located across the river, and in Bossier. So it's so all of these offices are connected, and someone in one office can work on a business that's opened in any of the offices, and we meet, you know, virtually every single day for about an hour and discuss problems and, you know, and get and solve some problems, and those, you know, things like Google Hangouts and digitizing all the files so that they can be worked anywhere. Those, you know, and management systems for doing that just were not in place before, say, about 3 or 4 years ago. And now that they are in place, it absolutely makes no sense not to do these things. And that's you know, even in the even in the legal profession, which is maybe one of the last professions to pick up things like this and run with them, they're completely changing, and you know, it's something that we've seen. You know, there's no need to go. You know, we're not advertising in a new place or spending new advertising dollars. We're just taking better advantage of the advertising dollars that are already being spent by being
there
in places
that. Yeah, you're doing, to bring it home to our favorite topic of ephemeralization, you're just doing more and more with less and less.
You're
on that arc of eventually doing everything with nothing. And by the way, I just want to say agile. It's the agile development methodology. I had to go look it up.
Yeah.
I can't believe I couldn't.
And big companies, you know, the only way to be agile is to allow entrepreneurship within the organization.
Right.
If IBM can't turn on a dime, but maybe a small unit within IBM that's given a little autonomy to try something new. You know, that's kind of the Google model in the way they operate. They have, you know, little teams that, you know, can try different things, and, you know, and they have the freedom to fail. And, you know, and when that doesn't work out, they try something else. So
right. That's why you do a minimum viable product, because it's probably not going to work, or it probably needs a lot of change before
right.
Before it kicks in. The WebVan was the opposite of Agile. They had very little pivot room. It had to work. It had to work the way they set it up, because they bought all the trucks. They already, you know, they bought the warehouse. They had promised to do it within 30 minutes. They were so restricted by the huge investment that they made that it had to either succeed or fail, and it wasn't going to succeed, sadly. So
yeah.
So it went down in flames. But these kinds of methodologies, and you see this in these other stories that we've linked here too, in an odd sort of a way. This one story that you had, how successful people work less and get more done. If you read that story, this is really about good strategies for not letting the fact that you've got this, you know, high stress, high tech job, whatever it is that you're doing, that you actually get a handle on it, and you can put in fewer hours and be more productive. In fact, there's an interesting statistic in there that talks about over about 55 hours a week, it doesn't matter how many more hours you put in, the amount of, you know, the productivity goes so flat and actually starts to move down in the other direction, you might as well have stopped at 55. So people who work 70 hours a week might as well have just worked 55. They're not they're not actually getting any more work done. That kind of idea, I think, is more readily accepted today than it was. And I think it's because there have been things like Agile and Lean, and we're getting used to seeing things ephemeralized and digitalized and, you know, coffee shopified. We start to step back and go, you know what, you don't need as much stuff, and you don't need to push as hard. You've got to find that model where things click. You got to find that model where things things kind of fall into place. And
well, you know, you
I
talk about the minimally viable product. A lot of times these days is a 99-cent app for a smartphone, right?
Well, there you go. Yeah.
If you can set up what basically amounts to the entire ordering system for a web van of the year 2015, if the whole system could be set up with a simple app that would go onto the smartphones and into the pockets of all your potential customers. I say 99-cent app. You probably, if you're a company like that, it would be an app you give away, right?
Of course, that's what Deliv does. That's what Deliv is, right? You've summed it up exactly. They took the fleet of trucks, they took the warehouses, the whole thing, and they turned it into an app that the retailers have and an app that the drivers have, and that's all you need, right? And of course, you give it away for free because you want drivers and you want retailers.
And you don't have to buy the vans because these are private people, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. So
you've got a fleet of volunteers
where your customers are.
Yeah. And you've got the biggest collection of warehouses you can possibly imagine, with people already like prepping merchandise and having it ready to go out the door anyhow. All you need is the infrastructure to bring it together. The infrastructure to bring it together turns out to be a world where everybody's got a smartphone. Where people are used to using mobile technology to fulfill exactly these kinds of orders, and yeah, there it is. It's a great example, actually, Stephen, that an app made all the difference. And it's very interesting that that when Fred Smith pushed back against things like Uber and Lyft, you know, what he said was, well, I can see where there might be some room for this app kind of thing. But in his head, he's thinking, yeah, but, you know, it's all about the fleet of airplanes, right? You know, you got to have the airplanes leaving from Memphis. You can see that model is very well entrenched. And a model that says, no, it doesn't really matter where the airplanes are. You don't need any airplanes. If you need one, you know, you'll find somebody who has one kind of approach is just so radically different. But it's been completely enabled by the technology that we have.
Yeah.
How about this story? You saw this one, the Nest CEO Tony Fadell on the future of the internet. What does Tony have to tell us about the future of the internet, Stephen?
Well, Phil, my apologies. I don't have that pulled up. Can you brief
me tell
real
you,
quick
I,
on that? Let me tell you
what he tells you. Okay. Because what he tells us is exactly what you and I have been saying, in fact, that what we're seeing is everybody gets connected. And
further further mobilization, and the technology gets more and more intimately associated with people, because right now it's in our pockets. Pretty soon we'll be wearing it, right? And
You think about this. You know, I used to in the year 2000, and certainly in the year 1985, get my hair cut regularly. It never involved computer technology. Okay, never did.
Right.
I mean, why would it? In the year 2000 even. But today, every time I get my haircut, I open up the app from the place where I get my haircut, and I check, and I check myself in. It's like, because if I look, and if it's a 45-minute wait, then I'm not going to go, right? I'll go to a different location, or I'll go a different time. But that kind of just-in-time, I can plan my life better thing has suddenly made a process that used to have absolutely nothing to do with information technology is now completely intertwined with information technology. And it's not just, you know, this place where I get my haircut. You multiply that by every single thing everybody does every day, all the time, right? I mean, that's you know, it's the datafying and appifying of everything, right?
It's funny you should mention that. You know, last week I had my haircut, and, you know, when we got finished, I said, do I pay up front? And she says, no. She pulls out her cell phone. And you know, it has that little clippy thing that goes in the audio jack of the iPhone, right? It's a little square thing that you swipe a credit card through.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And of course it's paid through PayPal, and she asked for me to sign, and so I signed with my finger on her phone, right? And which is a weird looking signature, but it's close enough. It worked.
Yep.
And and I was out of there. And I just asked her, well, you know, that's interesting. I don't pay up front or anything. She says, yeah, I just rent the chair from the place. I'm an independent, you know, contractor, as are everybody else in this building. And it was, you know,
it's a
huge salon.
Wow.
And so, and she said, and I actually, you know, and I actually pay the person that I rent this chair from, you know, by the same way. You know, I PayPal them the money for the chair once a month, you know, so. And so the whole business was being taken care of. It's, you know, and instead of it being a salon, if you think about it, it's like a mall for haircut people, right? I mean,
sure.
Each chair was its own little business.
This place you get your haircut is Uber, for crying out loud, right? It's just connecting
people. Yeah, it's Uber for hair.
Yeah, you know, that's amazing. So that's even more, that's a great example. Even you've trumped my haircut story by a significant margin, okay? Because that is truly an information technology-driven approach to getting your haircut, right? And I mean, when it's into your hair care, right? Or we've talked about, you know, when the Internet of Things is in your toothbrush, right? It's just everywhere. It's touching everything. And the business models that not only are aware of that, but that leverage that. Those are the ones that are really going to move ahead. And that's why I think more than any other reason, when I look at same-day delivery, I say it's a certainty. You know, it's not even a question of whether. It's a question of how soon will this become the norm. Because I think it will. I think, you know, in before Amazon Prime, you could have made a real case, and I'm sure there were people who did make a real case, oh, nobody needs second-day delivery, right? You can wait 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
If you need it that bad, you go to the store, right? Nobody's going to pay extra for that. Nobody's going to pay a fee every year just to have things ship second day. But now it's like if you're like me, you know, if you see something you want and it's not Prime, it's like, oh, now what do I do?
I guess I
can't order that, right?
I guess I don't need it that bad.
Yeah, it might take a week to get here. I'll be a different person. I could be dead by then. I'm sorry. That's out of my window. You know, if it's not second day, it's dead to me, right? And I was never in that big a hurry to do anything. So I think, you know, if that change has occurred that rapidly for consumers, the change to same day is going to be just as rapid. and it will be just as seamless. You know, you won't see it coming, and then one day you'll be like, well, if I can't get it today, just forget it. Right? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and not only if I can't get it today, if I can't get it in this window when I want it, just, you know, don't waste my time, basically.
Yeah.
Is what it's going to be. All of which takes us to this wonderful, let's look ahead just a little bit. This last story, in 2025, IKEA thinks your kitchen will include drones. I got to tell you, I just got such a huge kick out of reading this story because some of it is really out there, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
they're talking
what,
about, you know,
what
smart
could be
tables.
More yeah, conservative and, you know, than IKEA, right? I mean,
right.
You'd think IKEA is, you know, that's probably the least technologically advanced business. Well, actually, IKEA is, you know, I've been in an IKEA store recently, and they kind of got it going on, actually. And you'd think that it would just, you know, it's just a furniture store or something, and it is.
Well, where you buy a box of plywood and then you spend like 5 hours assembling things. I mean, that's my experience with IKEA. Bookshelves.
Yeah,
it's
a little bit more than
that
these days.
Yeah,
it's a little bit more than that these days, but it's you know, but they've got some ideas about where the future is going, and that includes you know, little bots that are helping you out in the kitchen, and so some of their future ideas about how their, you know, how a kitchen will be organized, and hopefully the laundry room too. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I really could use you know, some robots in there that are doing the laundry would be pretty cool, but anyway, that's you know, that is part of their model and how they're planning in for the future. So,
absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, the thing that really got my attention on the IKEA story was the kitchen without a refrigerator. And you go, well, the what without a what? You know, I mean, because other than, you know, a sink, right, a tap with water and a stove, I think that is like the thing that's most associated with a kitchen. You think, well, you got to have a refrigerator.
Right.
I mean, it's, although there was a time when they didn't exist and people didn't have them. And they're saying, no, you don't need a refrigerator because you're going to get everything brought to you the day you need it. It'll all be fresh, and you'll have little refrigerated containers that things will arrive in, but you're going to consume them the same day. And you read something like that and you go, that's insane. There's no way that model will ever catch on. And I think about the transition that I've already described from us going from, well, we'll get it whenever we get it, to it's got to be within 2 days, to it's got to be today, to it's got to be within the window that I say today. And suddenly that doesn't sound so crazy at all. I still think people will have at least small refrigerators in the kitchen. I just, because I can't get my head around there not being a refrigerator. But you know what? I couldn't get my head around the idea of a store not having a counter. And then you go to the Apple Store, and there's not one, right? There's no cash register.
Yeah,
there's no, you know, your whole thing about signing the phone. That was the first place I ever encountered that. It's just like you talk to a person, and they give you your merchandise, and you know, the whole thing kind of, a guy my age kind of creeped me out. I'm like, well, where's the actual store stuff that you must have in order for this, you know, to be a store? And you
feel like
the same way about it.
I feel like I'm stealing this, you know, because I haven't gone, you know, through a line. At the end.
But,
yeah,
but someday when we don't have refrigerators in our kitchens, we'll look back and we will marvel that anybody would have ever thought that that same day delivery was going to do anything but be completely huge. And I know we're approaching our time rapidly, Stephen. So what's our music?
Our music tonight is Funny Life by Funky Stereo.
Funky Stereo with Funny Life. Thank you all for being with us. Stephen, thanks for putting that together and for coming up with all these great stories that we had to reference. We will be back again next Thursday night with a brand new show. And until next time, live to see it.
Peace.